This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, number 156. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
And you can call us on
02088167691.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. So the IPL has begun, and we get all the excitement and the razzmatazz of that, but also there's some seriously good cricket being played as well, and some seriously good skills on show, which a lot of people can learn from. Gareth, you've been involved in the IPL. What's your view on it?
Well, on the skills that are going to be on show, well, I think fielding is improving. It's one of the areas in the IPL which was recognised in the first two editions to be fairly weak, really. And certainly when you watch India field nowadays, and we saw it in the ODIs, didn't we, against England before Christmas, their fielding has really improved hugely. And that's come as a result of overseas players coming into the IPL and really raising those standards and showing the local Indians that there's, you know, that fielding is vitally important. So we'll see a good, consistent level of fielding within the IPL this year across overseas players and also the domestic Indian players. And as we talked about last week, some of the signings that have been made are going to be very interesting to see the skills, not just their ability to get runs and get wickets, but the skills that they deploy to be able to pick up those runs and wickets. So, you know, there's some seriously big hitters on show out there, but also some really good players. We've all been watching Sangakkara and Jai Wardner play in the test matches. And obviously Jai Wardner has moved recently within the IPL, and it'll be interesting to see how he's deployed, but also the way he goes about his batting is just magnificent in any form of the game. So I like the way he goes about it, and it'll be interesting to see how he goes.
Burns, do you fancy a run out in the 2020 Eden Garden, something like that?
Yeah, I'd love it. I was there the other day, actually. It's magnificent the way they transform all the venues and generally get the you know, they invigorate the dreams and excitement of the local community in whatever city it is. I think it's great that they ship all the big names in. I'm pretty happy that Katy Perry's playing the opening festival as well. That should be opening ceremony, sorry, not festival, which should be, you know, quite good on the eye there, I think, in Chennai.
Well, she's back on the market as well, Berners, so you know, maybe you could just pop over there and
could show her a wink. Show a bit of my off-spin, couldn't I? Just tweaking it away from her.
Nothing excites a woman like a good off-spinner.
Yeah. No, I think it's good, the IPL. And I think, like Gareth said, the power hitters are the ones that do it for me. The ones that they bring in that, you know, at the top of the order, the McCullums and the Gales and the Warners, Kohli also, you know, really exciting to watch half an hour of those guys just literally bashing it around the park if it's their day.
Yeah, we discussed it a bit on the Pitch Vision Academy this week. In one of our articles, we took some of the star names who are playing in the IPL, and we kind of picked out the role that they play within a team and said, have you got a player similar to that in your club side? So, you know, we had some star names like Kevin Peterson and Irfan Pathan, and people who you think about when you think about 2020, but also some of the lesser known names who do a good job. So I think with 2020 especially, I think it's really important, even more important maybe, to know your role and to be able to execute those skills straight away, because there's no time to make up for a mistake, is there?
Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely right. And as with a lot of the movement that's gone on this winter in the auctions and the trade that have been going on, it'll be interesting to see how some of those players that have made a bit of a name for themselves at one franchise playing in a certain role, how their new franchises will deploy them and how they'll line them up in their setups.
I always find it fascinating how some of the massive names of world cricket often get, you know, brought into a franchise and they don't even play. You know, you see some of the faces sat in their dugouts and you think, blimey, is he with them as well? And he's not even on the ballpark here. So it shows like the strength and depth they have. You know, I think one of them's got about three frontline spinners, is it, down in Chennai. I know they've got a turning pitch. But you know, they've got three or four front, you know, world's, four of the world's best spinners at the moment that they've got down there. So it's quite interesting the selection, how they select the teams and how those guys gel. I guess they know from venue to venue what kind of team they need, and often the opponents, they all have analysts, as Gareth knows in depth, that I guess that comes into it a lot as well. They pre-plan, they know who they're going to face, and they can pick the team accordingly.
Well, I was going to ask you a little bit about that, Gareth, because I read an article this week about John Buchanan, who's working in New Zealand now, and he's trying to bring a little bit more quantitative analysis into selection. And he came up with some percentages, which when they're looking at selection, they sort of break down the importance of different parts of a player's skill set to find out what their chances are of being selected. And I've got that list here, so I'll be interested in thinking what you think about the idea of having that percentage in the first place, and whether you think those percentages are broadly right. So they're it's 35% of their score, their total score is what's called significant performance. So yep. I presume that's runs and wickets.
Yep.
Consistent performance is 25%, which I presume is what they do from game to game, rather than scoring 100 and then getting four noughts in a row, something like that. Contribution to the team is 15%. Fitness is 10%. Fielding is 10%. And there's a 5% leeway for the intuition of the selector, who just has a hunch. So what do you think about those percentages, and if you like them, do you think they're broadly right?
Well, I'm very interested in the concept, and it's not one that I'm unfamiliar with, obviously, from working within that field and working around some people who are very good at putting formulas together for outlining different decision-making or different approaches to the game. So, I think it can work. The next question for me is, I'd like to see the data, because there's obviously data that goes behind that. So it says, for example, I think it's, was it 15% fitness?
Fitness 10, fielding 10.
Yeah. So for example, what makes up the fitness? You know, so there would be sub percentages and formulas underneath that that would make up the fitness. The same with fielding. You know, one of the biggest questions which has come out of cricket has been, how do you quantify fielding? So, you know, there's more questions that come out of it, and it's a great article, and fantastic that John Buchanan, and obviously it would be him rather than anybody else, because he's a very good thinker about the game and always looking for different ways to try and cut the game down, which is great, and that's one of the reasons why he was so successful as an Australian coach. But it would be the stuff that sits underneath it. So that would be my first question. The second question would be, you know, who are we talking about? If we're talking about New Zealand, how does it all match up? You know, how does their selection now match up against the formulas that have been put in place? And it would be quite interesting to see that list, wouldn't it? To see how people are going. And if they're doing it absolutely spot on and picking the people that are coming out on top of that, then it would be interesting to see how that correlates into victories or wins or draws or whatever over a period of time. So I think it's a really interesting piece. And it makes a lot of sense to me, but obviously there's some underlying figures and then some underlying stats that would need to be, for me, would need to be brought out of it for me to make head nor tail of it. But as a concept, I think it's a good one.
My other question is that there are ways that modern professional teams are trying to quantify fielding, which is, as you said, Gareth, notoriously difficult to quantify. But without access to video and all that kind of thing, how do you, if you're running a school team or a club team, or you're running an academy in India, something like that, and you want to quantify fielding a little bit better, what can you do? Is it purely a matter of saying getting the scorer to make a note of things as they go along, and what kind of things can you make a note of?
Well, I mean, that's match analysis that you're talking about there. To me, fielding can be quantified within practice environments as well.
Right.
So, for example, if I'm working with a group of fielders, and I want to know what their static throw accuracy is like. So if they're throwing from 20 metres, and it was something that Richard Housel brought in with England when he first came in to work alongside Peter Moores, and we had people standing 20 yards away from two stumps, and everybody would have 10 throws, and you'd chart it over a period of time. Well, you know, if the England cricket team can be doing that on the morning of a game, then that can be something that can be done around clubs all over the world, because 20 metres is 20 metres and two stumps are two stumps. And you can start building up a bit of a picture, and then obviously you start to work in moving laterally, and that's where pitch vision comes in as well. As you know, we see on the fielding setup that we've got on pitch vision, that we can monitor the throws, we can monitor the speed of a ball, and we can monitor the pace of a throw as well. Obviously not everybody's going to have that, but you can have a 5 meter run to a stationary ball, pick up and throw a set of stumps that's got a net behind it, and just keep a tally on things. And I think in cricket we generally keep a tally on fielding poorly in practice, and all it would mean would be a whiteboard up next to your fielding practice, and every time a fielder does three sets of throws, he records his or her data up on the board, and then you stick it on a spreadsheet, and all of a sudden you've got amount of data going over the course of a year to see how somebody's progressing, which I think is massively important. Same with catching, you know, high catching, low catching. I could hit 20 balls low left and monitor how many catches have been taken out of those low lefts. So that's in the practice environment. I think the scorers have enough to do, to be brutally honest with you, mate. I'd always give
yeah,
it.
Well.
I would always give a job in a match to somebody else that's sitting there and watching it, and literally just do plus minuses in terms of stops, and also monitoring throws as well, throw accuracy. So you know, you could make up your own sheet on a spreadsheet and monitor it however you wanted to. But the crucial thing is that the players understand that there is going to be some subjectivity involved in that. It's not going to be absolutely on the money objective, because you're asking somebody to assess each stop, you know. So if I get half a hand on one that's going to my right hand side, I might think that I've stopped two runs, but the person that's doing it might think that it's actually stopped one run. And you just have to accept that sort of thing is going to happen. But it's all good feedback for a fielding side. So yeah, give it to somebody else rather than the scorer, because they got enough to do.
In my other day job as sales manager for the UK for Pitch Vision, I could strongly recommend to anyone out there listening that you do invest in a Pitch Vision fielding system. It's only £750 and it will tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So that's the end of our little introduction to the show. But before we move into the next section, we'll just finish things off with our quick fire round, as we have started doing every week. And this week, the answer from the team has got to be either batsman or bowler. So, Berners, over to you.
First one, win your 2020 matches.
Bowler.
Bowler.
Deal with the pressure the best.
Batter.
Bowler.
Complain the most.
Bowler, with good reason.
Bowler, definitely. Interview time now on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and this week I'm speaking to a chap called Gareth Hughes. So welcome to the show, Gareth.
Hello.
Now, Gareth, you are a cricketer who's been lucky enough to work with Pitch Vision Academy batting coach Gary Palmer. So tell us about yourself. What type of cricket do you play?
I play Birmingham League cricket, but as I explained to Gary when I went and saw him, I've been having trouble just making... I'm a good second-team player, which is quite a lot. It's two runs playing for the seconds. And obviously, that gives me opportunity in the first team. I've had an opportunity in the first team, but I just can't seem to go and succeed there and make the runs and sort of live up to the potential. So I thought I'd invest some time. I bought into some of the things that Gary had said on the internet and by means of interviews that you'd done with him. So I thought it was worth the time and money and go and see him and do some work with him.
And how long did you spend in the nets with Gary then in total?
Gary recommended that he give me the full one-to-one session that he normally likes to give, which involved 3 hours of batting non-stop and using the different angles and swing attacks of the bowling machine.
And you worked on a few different angles and a few different ways of batting that's unusual. Normally the bowling machine set up for right arm over and away you go, but you worked to a few different angles and swings. Did that reveal any technical issues that you had?
Yeah, we started with an awkward setup because it was in swing left arm over to a right-handed batsman, which I am a right-handed batsman. And so Gary had me immediately in the on-drive position. And then we started playing on drives, and from there I developed to go back and play from my stance. and I was playing the in-swinging left arm over ball, which was quite tricky, particularly where, like you said, normally you just walk in with your right arm over, usually a weight swing. And it identified that simple things in my setup were causing me great difficulties.
And how quickly were you able to correct those problems?
Quite quickly. Certainly by the end of the three-hour session, I certainly was playing a lot freer and more flowing. The simple things that I was doing wrong were basically in my setup. I was standing fast too sideways on. My shoulder was closing me off. My left shoulder was facing sort of the bowler and mid-off, rather than being aligned with my head and shoulders facing down the wicket to wicket. And my backlift was also incorrect. So by identifying that, by the lines that I was playing, quite quickly, that could be rectified, and then I could go somewhere during the session and perfect, aligning myself to the different lines and angles and swings of attack that I had.
That's given you a solid technical foundation then. Where do you go from here? How do you follow that up? Do you just take that into games, or do you have any kind of follow up work you can do in your club nets?
I think certainly now I will definitely, just for my own self correction, if you like, and just as a checking point before I play games, when I'm on my throw downs or my nets before I go out to play, I will certainly start with people throwing balls down or bowling balls down from the left arm over or right arm round angle. Get used to that, and then ask them to throw some from right arm over angle, and just work on my alignment. And also, when I'm batting now, I'm concentrating in my setup, without it being a distraction, obviously, to make sure that my shoulders are facing down there, I'm not getting closed off. And as I'm grooving my shots, I'm bearing my alignment, my balance and completion shot, each time that I do.
Well, good luck for the coming season. You've got your season starting very shortly, I would imagine.
Yes, our first league game's on the 21st of April. Last week, that seemed really good with the weather we had, but this week, it doesn't seem so good. We just have snow.
Yes, well, yeah, that's the start of the English season for you, isn't it? Always subject to inclement weather.
Certainly, yeah. But we'll see how we go. Hopefully, I've done enough work to succeed in the beginning of the season. I have something to build up.
But good luck with it. We hope it goes well for you. And hopefully Gary's technical advice has stood you in good stead. And anyone who wants to find out a little bit more about what Gary Palmer does, you can head over to pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. Thanks very much for your time on the show today, Gareth.
No problem, David. You're welcome. Nice to have spoken to you.
Now it's time for us to answer your questions in the mailbag, and this week we've got a couple of questions where the person who sent in the question can win a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com, and you can get streaming online videos, worksheets, ebooks, all kinds of brilliant things to improve your game there at pitchvision.com/academy. So Bernice, you've got a couple of questions this week. What are they?
Do indeed. First question's come in from India, Varun. And he's an opening batsman, and he's just asking for a few tips and tricks as to how he can improvise to score more runs off of a good length ball. I should be listening to the answer to this one as well. He's not a very good runner between the wicket either, so that obviously doesn't help, but he wants to maintain a good average. So he's also saying that the skill level of the bowlers he faces is very good. They all say that, Varun. But what do you think, guys?
Well, I think the key to scoring off length balls is a couple of things. One is to be able to pick your time on when to do it, because you don't want to be doing it when the ball's seaming around or the bowler's on top. You want to make sure that you've got some kind of advantage first. But then I think it's a matter of playing relatively straight and then just being able to open or close the face of the bat slightly to put the ball into a gap. So, if you have more men on the offside, if it's early on, then perhaps you can see a gap through mid-wicket or something like that. But you still play as if you're going to play straight. Your backlift is still relatively straight. Maybe it's over off stump, something like that. But just as you're making contact with the ball, You close the face slightly so you can hit the ball into the gap. It takes a bit of practice because you still need to maintain good technique. You don't want to shovel it with the bottom hand or anything like that. But I think if you can place the ball into a gap and then you can read the fielder and make sure that you can get to the other end, then you can rotate the strike relatively easily.
I would probably challenge how you can do it a little bit better, because what we tend to find is that some parts of the world can use their wrists a little bit easier, or tend to use their wrists a little bit easier than others. And it's something that you'll find on the wickets that they play in, and on Sri Lanka, where England are at the moment, in India, Pakistan and Bangladesh, the local players tend to be a bit wristier because the ball's coming on a bit slower and doesn't tend to seam around quite so much as it would do in say, New Zealand, England, Australia, for example. So that comes into play. But I always talk about using body position to open up a gap rather than wrists. And you see that a lot in one-day cricket now, and from length balls as well. So it's something that I know Kev Peterson does very, very well in all formats of a game, not just in one-day cricket. And I recall Jacob Oram bowling length on about fifth stump to him on a regular basis. And to counteract that, Kev just got across his stumps and played an orthodox shot. But because his body position got one side of a ball, he was able to open up a mid-wicket area with a very straight-batted shot. But because he'd used his body and got his body one side of a ball, the ball would go into there. And he did it three or four times. And it meant that Jacob Oram had to change his mode of attack, which then came into other areas that Kev could score off of. But you see that not just from Kev, but from loads of players around the world, is how they use their body position to get one side of a ball or the other. Or, in fact, as Ian Bell has done pretty well, coming down the pitch, Kev coming down the pitch. Because if somebody's hitting length consistently, it's because we haven't, as batters, put them under pressure. They're just allowed to bowl into length. Yeah, if we move our feet and walk down the wicket, and I talked about this in an article right at the outset when I came on board, I think in October, is if you can walk down the wicket and play a forward defensive shot to mid-on and mid-off, you're actually 5 yards down the pitch already and you can steal one. And we're seeing that in all formats of the game now, with players not necessarily running down the wicket to have a hack, but moving down the wicket to use that length ball to be able to push either side of a fielder to pick up those singles. That in turn puts pressure onto the bowler. The bowler will start to have to change their plan a little bit and come into your own scoring areas. So to me, body position and moving down the wicket into a length ball is really good to get off strike, as Kev talks about in his online coaching course, and to put the pressure back on the bowler.
Next question is from Paul, and he'd like to take our team's thoughts on the most useful preparation for an under 12 team playing 20 over cricket. So very relevant. So far, he's included formal nets, fielding drills and games, also indoor games. But he wants to invigorate the boys, keep them excited and interested, and wants to know what we do.
He's got his own mini version of the IPL going on there, but with under 12. So what's your advice, Gareth?
Well, I'd say first and foremost, watch a few games. It's something that I don't think we do enough of. IPL's coming up. I think it's on ITV4 in our country, but it'll be broadcast all around the world. And I think one of the aims of it is to have it on normal television as opposed to just satellite telly, so as many people can access it as possible. So, watch some games and see what's being done out there. And I always think it's a great idea to get the group of players together, maybe record it on whatever recorder you've got, and then take that down to the club. And as soon as we get some rain, and we're bound to get some in that first month or so of a cricket season, bang on the game and let's have some discussions about it. And it's something that's not done enough, because we can start to try and put things in place. But if it's not relating to what's happening in the best leagues of 2020 and the best teams in the world, then we'll be going down the wrong track. And the other thing I'll say is tactically get yourself sorted. And secondly, fielding wise, you can't do enough, because at junior level in particular, games can be dominated by good fielding units, and I was lucky enough to play in some good junior sides that punched well above their weight down the years, and we made fielding very much part of our thing, and probably that's one of the reasons why I ended up really pushing fielding every time I talk about coaching. So to me, watch some cricket, watch the IPL, watch some of the 2020 games that will be going on around the world over the next few months, record them, watch them as a team, and you can never do enough fielding.
I like that, Gareth. I think one of the biggest misconceptions of cricket is when I was brought up, used to play a lot of rugby and a lot of football, and what you used to find is before the games, when you used to play those sports, the coach would spend a lot of time talking to the team as a team about how you were going to win that day, from maybe past performances or from who was available in that changing room. You know, this is what we're going to do today. Mickey's playing. He's 5'10" at the age of 9. We're going to knock it into him and he's going to score because they're all little ones. In cricket, you seem to go through the motions somewhat, especially at the lower levels where you just rock up, you go out and play, and it's more based on an individual kind of feedback and knowledge base with the coach, where it's, oh, you know, you just play straight today and you do this. There's nothing quite so collectively, which I think for young teams playing, you know, a 12-year-old team playing 2020, you can have some real togetherness as a unit, which often goes amiss, from my experience anyway.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, if you get a group of 10 people together who are like-minded, i.e. like playing cricket, and if there's not opportunities in there to learn from each other and to extract learning from each other as well as from the coach, then I'm a Frenchman, mate, and I'm certainly not one of those. So I think that there's some great opportunities that are often missed. Now, if you've got the stimulus of an IPL game going on in the box, you know, as a coach, you can split them into four teams and say, right, we're going to watch the first 5 overs of this game, and you're going to be the captain, all right? Each team's going to be the captain, and you're going to tell us how you're going to set up the next 5 overs, or you're going to review what happened in that 5 overs. You know, when it's raining or even when it's not raining, I think that stuff is absolutely invaluable. And you find out a lot more about each other, and also you start picking each other's brains, and people start to think, do you know what, I could actually do that in a game, and that would work for me. So I like the group approach to coaching. I like discussions because I think that's how we learn the best.
And just to add to the fielding side of things as well, there's if you want to keep things fresh with fielding, that we've got absolutely tons of free fielding drills on Pitch Vision Academy. So head over to pitchvision.com/academy and go to the drills section, and you'll have drills for years and years to come. You could probably do 3 years worth of drills before the guys have to do the same one twice. But you probably do want to go back to some of the more effective ones a bit more often than that. But the point is, we've got absolutely loads of stuff for you to try, so they'll never get fed up of doing their fielding practice. Time now for our 60-second soapbox. And every week, one of the members of the team gets their chance to rant and rave about something that's really got on their wick for the week. So, Bernard, your turn this week. Over to you.
It's actually contradictory to our latest fantastic weather, but this week it's all about rain, and I just can't understand in the English game how, you know, we often turn up for a whole Saturday and spend 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 hours sat in a clubhouse without anyone making a decision. It's clearly raining, there's water everywhere, yet no one knows how to make a decision whether the game's on or off. We go off the pitch, we go on the pitch, no one knows about the league structure, about the changing overs or how much time we've lost. And more times than not, it gets to about 6 or 7 o'clock, you've bowled about 3 overs, your boots and feet are damp, and you just want to just go home. And it just grates me that you can't just say, look, it's raining. It's obvious it's raining, it's wet, let's all go home. Let's all go down the King's Arms and do a bit of karaoke. But no, we stand around in the clubhouse, twiddling our thumbs, and normally I lose about £1,000 at blackjack. Get over it and call it on or off.
Now, that's all we've got time for on the show this week. But before we go, there is a time-honoured tradition of giving away an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You've got your streaming videos, e-manuals, e-books, worksheets, audio, all kinds of things for improving your cricket. So who's the winner of this week's competition?
Well, I can't have two coach education-y ones in 2 weeks, so I'm going to go for Varun, who talked about having good length balls and scoring off of good length balls, and basically to go over it, it's just putting pressure back on the bowlers, because you'll find that they won't bowl so many good length balls if you put pressure back on by using your body, or as David said, use your wrists to access different areas. So Varun's my winner this week.
Yep, so congratulations to you. And if there's anyone listening now who wants to send in their question, we do get a lot of questions coming in these days, but please send in your question. We can never have enough. You can contact us by email or by phone. Bernard, you've got the details there?
Do indeed. It's coach@pitchvision.com. Or the phone number is 020-88-167-691.
Every question is read and considered, so don't panic if your question isn't read out on any particular week. It's going to come out at some time. It's just we need to get around to it, so please send in your questions. You can also contact us using Twitter. It's at PV Cricket Coach, and you can get us on Facebook. We're facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. If you want to subscribe to the show, you can listen to it every week by subscribing in iTunes. Head over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy in there, leave a review if you like us. 5-star reviews accepted at the moment. And if you don't want to use iTunes for any reason, then head over to pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link at in the green section in the top there, and you'll find the feed, the RSS feed, which contains all the audio files, so you can stick it into your phone or whatever other device that you use that doesn't use iTunes. And just as a little special for people who listen right to the end of the podcast, there we have a brand new tiny little feature at the end of the show called the Tailender, and the Tailender is a buzzword of the week. So this week I think it's going to be a term called curtain railing. Have you ever heard that, Bernus?
No, what's that?
It's when you are facing a bowler, you're batting, you're facing a bowler, and he bowls you a ball which swings away or seams away, and you chase it with your bat as if your bat is on a curtain rail.
I love it.
You end up nicking it, quarter second slip, having to pay your team money and go home without getting hardly any runs.
Without any curtains.
Exactly. You don't even get any nice curtains. So avoid curtain railing. It's a technical mistake. Keep that bat nice and tight in. Keep your shape. And make sure that you leave it or you possibly get a full face of the bat on it. But never adjust sideways. That's the tail end of tip. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Berners. Cheers, Gareth.